In my work for our Unitarian Universalist Association, I spend a lot of time wondering, why are any of us here? Why do we show up? And I've been thinking about that more in particular when I think about all of the violence that has happened in church. It was within a span of months, just a year and a half ago, when the synagogue was shot up in Pittsburgh, when the Roman Catholic Church there finally talked about the Roman Catholic priest sexual abuse scandal. And I wonder, why do we trust religion at all? But I also think of the words of Unitarian Universalist writer and minister, the Reverend Robert Fulghum, who writes, "To be human is to be religious. And to be religious is to be mindful. To be mindful is to pay attention. And to pay attention is to sanctify existence." And I think we show up because we are innately asking religious and religious questions. And I think a lot about what that means for our ministers, since I now oversee the process for ministerial transitions. And I think of the last couple of ministers' gatherings where I have posed this question to ministers. What does a congregation need from its minister today in 2019 and now 2020? I got the kind of responses you would expect. They need good preaching. They need pastoral care. They need someone who understands about the way church works, someone to work with staff, someone to do social justice. But what intrigued me is what they didn't say. Not one minister in these two groups of over 100 ministers said, "My job as a minister is to build trust with a congregation." And no one said what I think is so important. The role of the minister is to model what it means to do no harm to one another. So those two things made me turn to my group of interim ministers and ask them about this, but I also asked them the following question. Have any of you ever been yelled at or bullied by someone from the congregations you have served? 100% response rate of yes. We all have things to think about and work to do. And it makes me wonder, how do we build trust and rebuild trust in religion in this moment, in this country? How do we show up to ourselves? How do we show up for the wider world? And I think about the time that I have been asked to show up on behalf of Unitarian Universalism. It was 21 and a half years ago that I was asked to show up on behalf of Unitarian Universalists in Laramie, Wyoming, following the death of Matthew Shepherd. The minister had asked me to come. He said, "This is something I have never experienced before. It was brand new. Can you help us figure out what to do? All I want you to do is to come, to say a few words during the service, and then we'll go to the fence where Matthew was left to die and lay some flowers. But I think it would be really important for them to know that the Unitarian Universalist Association cared about them and what happened." So I went. And I showed up that morning. The minister introduced me, thanking me that I was there. He read a letter that someone had sent from another congregation, turned to me and said, "And now Reverend Cron will deliver this morning's sermon for us all." I don't remember what I said. I do remember that it was important to be there. Later, when we walked out to the fence where Matthew had been left to die, the minister left the flowers by the fence where he had been tied up, turned to me and said, "And now Reverend Cron will lead the memorial service for Matthew Shepherd." Later, when I talked with him about this, he said, "I had no idea what to do." And I thought about this with this new minister, and I said, "That's why we come to church. We're often figuring out how to live our lives when we don't know what to do. And the important thing is to be there, to show up, to honor what was happened, and figure out how to move forward." That same year, it was quite a year for me, 3 weeks after the shooting at Columbine High School, I was the guest preacher in Littleton, Colorado. Now, the church in Littleton, Colorado is the closest church to Columbine High School. And I walked in, not knowing how they were going to be doing, and I was amazed. I was amazed because on the walls of their sanctuary were letters sent by children from religious education programs offering hope and support to the people in the congregation, saying, "We know this is hard, we love you, we feel for you, thank you for being there." And it reminded me that our response can be really quite amazing. And it is often the children who lead us. And it also made me think of the researcher and author Brené Brown, who talks about how trust is built in little moments, little things that we do. And as I think about that, I also think, well, if it can be built in little moments, it's often broken in little moments. And it made me think back to my seminary training, where I was in a class on death and dying. And the dean of students at our college and at our seminary and the professor of the class on death and dying were having a conversation that I just happened to be there. And the dean was going, "We need to teach our students that violence happens in little moments as well as in the big moments. That it happens here in our seminary as opposed to outside our walls." And the professor looked back at him and looked at me and she smiled. And she said, "We just had that moment in class last week." And she told him this story. She had had us as students practice being chaplains for a person who was not doing well, unable to move, paralyzed, and we were to practice giving pastoral care to this person in the hospital bed. The first student stood up, went next to the student, sat down, and took his hand. At which point, the professor immediately stood up and said, "Do not ever do that again." And we were all surprised and shocked. And she said, "This is important for you to remember. Think about this patient. He has absolutely no control over his life or his body. You have taken his hand without permission, without asking first, and reinforced to him that he has no control. What would it be like just to sit next to him? What would it be like to offer to take his hand if he wanted to after you had talked with him, and not just taken his hand?" I still carry that story with me as a minister, how so often we are wrestling with feeling out of control of things and how hard that is. And how much we often try and think we know what the right thing to do is, but we don't. It made me think of a recent visit to our congregation on the west side of Cleveland, where Wayne was the senior minister some years ago. And I was talking with one of my coworkers at the UUA. And his son, who is not a UU, lives close to the church. And my friend John was visiting his son, and he and his son were taking two of his son's friends, all in their 20s, to a Cleveland baseball game. And they drove by the church, and they saw the huge rainbow flag, they saw the Black Lives Matter banner, they saw the Unitarian Universalist Church sign, and immediately the three young people began talking. Well, if I were going to go to church, that's the church I would want to go to. What a cool thing for what church can be. And it made me wonder, what would their experience be like if they showed up? Because having been in over 450 UU congregations, this is the most likely experience they would see. They would be told, you are welcome here. We are glad you are here. How many committees would you like to serve on? How much can you pledge? With the expectation that you will come in as these wonderful 25-year-old people and act exactly like the 60 and 70-year-olds who are already here. And as soon as you don't act like that, we will be less welcoming to you. All too often, that is a narrative within so many of our UU congregations, something we need to be mindful of, thinking about how we ourselves can do harm. We often do this also for so many of our ministers of color. I was talking with a friend of mine who was visiting a congregation one day. He showed up, African-American man, suit, tie, stole, holding a folder. First person he met asked him, are you here to clean the building this morning? Because they'd already assumed he wasn't one of us. And I think about the fact that so many of our congregations are wrestling with theology. We had one congregation try and say the theology of our congregation is that we are free thinkers and no other theology is welcome. And yet what so many of our congregations need and what so much the world needs now is not for there to be one religion, but to be a place where all religions and theologies are welcome to sit side by side. We can at times be as fundamentalist and as rigid as some of the churches we tried to leave. This could be a golden age for Unitarian Universalism. And can we reach out to those who really need us? Or will we eat our classmates? Will we circle the wagons and become smaller just so that we have our own sanctuary, as opposed to inviting the world to be a part of our sanctuary? I often ask congregations in ministerial search, is what you really want is a minister who's engaged in your lives, engaged in the community or in the world? Or do you want someone who's going to be a hospice chaplain for you as you get smaller and more only inward focused? We have a surprising number of congregations that only want to be inward focused because this is their safe place. And yet so many people in the world need a safer place. The Nigerian author Chimamanda Adichie talks about the danger of the single story. She writes, the single story creates stereotypes. And the problem with stereotypes is not that they are untrue, but that they are incomplete. They make one story the only story. I think so much of our challenge as a faith, as the world, is how do we let the multiple stories that each person, each community carries, be real and be side by side? Will we allow ourselves to be more than a single story? Or will we continue to commit the little acts of violence so that we feel safe? How do we decide to do no harm? I think about a conversation that, again, going back to the dean of my school, was talking about. He was meeting with the other deans of theological schools. And the two deans, he and the dean of the American Baptist School, had opposite opinions. And he said what fascinated him about that meeting more than anything else is how these seven other deans of the other schools were trying to make them come together, to make them feel better. And Bob finally said, I want you to think about this. Larry and I simply disagree. We will be friends after all this is over. Hopefully you all will say what you really want, and we can make a decision and move forward. But I would like you to spend less time thinking about what's going on between the two of us and being clear about who you are and what you believe so that we can make a decision. Can we ourselves disagree and still be respectful of one another? Is that possible? How do we find the strength from diversity that will strengthen us, as opposed as we try to limit ourselves and then exclude others? A final story about how I really learned this. Many years ago, I was at a conference on religion, gender, and sexuality. There were some 40 denominations gathered, and there were many of those there who were very, very fundamentalist and conservative. And I discovered myself on the first day on this long panel set between John, who was from the Church of God, and Mark, who was from the Church of Christ. And they passed around the microphone, and John said, "Hi, my name is John, I'm from the Church of God, and we are to the right of the right." And everyone laughed, and he handed the microphone to me. And I said, "Hi, my name is the Reverend Keith Cron. I'm the director of the Office of Bisexual, Gay, Lesbian, and Transgender Concerns." At which point I had to stop talking because John and Mark were scooting their chairs away from me. And then I finally said, "And we are from the left of the left." We spent the week talking about all issues around religion, gender, and sexuality. I could see their faces when I said more of our ministers are women than men, that we have been providing sexuality education that has been positive and sex positive for now over 25 years, that we have openly ordained and celebrate the lives of our clergy who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. And I watched them be very nervous all week. And it was on the last day that they came up to me, John and Mark and two of their friends, whose names I can't remember, they were probably Matthew and Luke. And they said, "We would like to have lunch to you." And my first thought was, well, this will be fun. But I agreed. And we sat together in awkward silence at first. And finally, Mark said to me, "Well, we just wanted to tell you something. We have listened to you all week and what you believe. And we want you to know that we disagree with every single thing that you have said. But we also want you to know that we respect you. Because at least you are clear about what you believe. Your faith means something to you." And in that moment, those four men were my teachers about how we could disagree and yet still be civil to one another and find ways to like one another. The story ends in an amusing way when John asked me if I knew anything about football, and they were surprised to discover that I knew more about the sport than any of the four of them did. And we all got to be teachers for each other that morning. And my hope for us as a faith now at this moment in 2020, my hope for you as a church at this moment in 2020, is that you will choose to build trust and faith over breaking it, that you will choose to be able to disagree without having to win, that we can ask permission, that we can ask questions of one another and be curious. That we can be classmates together without eating one another. If not, I fear we too will become extinct. Can we move forward and together become a faith that is one of more than a single story, but of many stories, sitting side by side, being together, and giving hope for not only ourselves, but for a world that needs it? Let us enter into a moment of silence and reflection.